You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
This is the home of Jerry's Percentages.
You're all pigeons. Filthy, filthy pigeons.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Marcellus Wiley will join us at 5:40. Looking back on yesterday's blowout wins by the Patriots and the Falcons, we know who's going to Super Bowl 51 in Houston. Packers just got smoked. The Steelers did not have a strong game. Roethlisberger with some interesting comments about the younger players on his team. In other words, the millennials on his team.
Oh, he's probably bang on. What did he say?
We'll hear what he had to say about that later. And Marcellus Wiley might be the only guy who really hates millennials more than you do.
I don't hate millennials. I'm married to one. I've identified a trait in the millennials that
you find consistent.
Consistent. One consistent trait.
Okay. So we'll get to that later in the hour. Raptors have lost three straight. Now DeMar DeRozan's injured. He's got an ankle injury, so he's going to miss the next two games. So they're in their first slump in like a year and a half. But there's no reason to panic. It's midseason. They'll get everything together. It's the dog days of January.
Yep.
When you're a good team and a team that's created a big buffer like the Raptors, you really don't have to concern yourself with that. When you're a younger, up-and-coming team that's trying to hold on for dear life, three losses in a row means a lot different. And that's what is on the line here for the Maple Leafs tonight. Even though they picked up a point against Ottawa, technically they've lost two in a row after going 3-0 coming out of the bye week. So tonight, I mean, let's not overcompensate here. It's not a must win. But Calgary got them the last time these two teams played. That was in Calgary. They were coming off a big win against Edmonton the night before, and the Flames were up 2-0, like 40 seconds into the game.
Right.
So both teams looking for a response because the Flames have not been playing well.
No.
So we'll see. We'll see what we have, and the game's on TSN 4.
They got to get a way to get to the All-Star break. Get 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
And get to the All-Star break, and then the official
stretch.
Then you can really get ready for the stretch. But just find a way to win 2 out of 3, and everybody's feeling good, and you can come back feeling good. Who do they got? Calgary.
Yeah. They got Calgary tonight, then at Detroit, at Philly, back to back.
But doesn't it? I was talking to a few players. Doesn't it feel weird this season? You had Christmas, which mandatory now, 3 days. Then you get your 5-day break, and then you get the All-Star break. Like I was asking a couple guys, what do you do in the All-Star? Nothing. We already had our break last week. You know, last week, the week before, like you—that's your.
Oh, I'm doing something.
Well, it does feel condensed, though. You're right, especially
for these guys just went to Mexico 10 days ago.
That's the thing. The Leafs had an early bye week. It's like in the NFL when you have a bye week, week four. You're like, really? Then I got to come back and play all those games.
But that's
you want it mid season if you can.
And it's just that's why you see people complaining about the schedule because you're getting these days off, but then on the back end. You're getting jammed up pretty good.
I think the fear here has to be if and when Austin Matthews hits a bit of a wall. He's played so well, so consistently well. He has been a dominating force for them. But they're going to have 3 games in the next 4 nights. Then he jumps on a bird all the way to L.A.
Right.
Is going to have to do the dog and pony show for 2 or 3 days. Yep. Then flies home. And then you got 35 games in like 73 nights or something like that.
Right.
For a kid that was at the World Cup, guy who was at the World Championships.
The draft, the combine, the
rookie camp.
His schedule for the past 12 months has been crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. And it's almost a credit. It is a credit to him that he hasn't had a fall off yet. But I, in a way, I'm almost expecting it. At least a mini slump. And don't give me the 13-game goalless drop because he was still playing well and he was still being effective in different ways. I'm talking like 3 or 4 games in a row where you're like 34 was invisible to him.
Yeah, it looks tired or looks run down.
Right,
looks
that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Hasn't really been himself the last couple, I will say
But you
that.
Have to give full marks. So I think Ottawa, both games that they played, outside of that amazing play he made off the draw, he was pretty invisible that night. The pass, what is it? Pass the Connor Brown, the set play off the draw. And then the other night against Ottawa, I think they did a pretty good job of shutting him down. He's going to be a focal point for every team. He's got to get used to that. And to your point, Hayes, there will be some nights where he just isn't able to physically or mentally battle through that attention he garners.
Let's bring in Ray Ferraro. Ray will have the call tonight on TSN 4, and he's on Overdrive, brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. We're just talking about Matthews and his schedule the past 12 months, playing overseas, and then the World Championships, then the draft, and then the World Cup, and now this season, which is condensed because of the off days. At the end of this three-game and four-night little spiel here, he's got to fly to L.A. and then fly back and then kickstart 35 games in 72 or 73 nights. I'm almost surprised he's been this effective and this energized through 44 games. Are you expecting at least at some point a 2-3-4 game slump where he really looks like he's worn down?
Yeah, but not just with him though. For a lot of these guys, even though they've played in some cases a pile of hockey in the past year, Marner played over 100 games or pretty close to 100 games last year. I look at these young guys like they're all going to hit it. They're all going to wear down at some point. And my curiosity is how quickly do they get their energy back? Because everybody loses it. Everybody loses or gets into a lull at some point. When you're young, you just run out of gas. You're just not as strong as you are later in your career. But can you dig your way out before it becomes a real problem? And I mean, the Leafs schedule is going to get super tight here after the All-Star break. And I think it'll be really interesting to see down the stretch who stays healthy, which teams stay healthy, which teams can get the most out of what little energy they have on a certain night. Like last night I was in Ottawa and both teams played three games in four nights and it looked like scrambled eggs the whole night. And Columbus was just lucky enough that Ottawa made one more mistake and they get 2 points instead of one. And a team like the Leafs, games like that might be the difference between getting in or not.
Well, we were also looking at their splits home and away, and it started off, they were a very effective and productive team at home, and they were brutal on the road, and everything's evened out, and that'll happen when you pick up points in 10 straight road games like they have. But now they've got more points on the road than at home. It's not a huge disparity. I think they have 24 at home or 25 at home compared to 25 or 26 on the road. But what does that say to you about their comfort level on the road and why maybe they're having some issues at home?
Well, I'm not real sure why they've all of a sudden they've had more trouble at home. I guess their early start at home, if they were going to be effective anywhere, that I would have guessed it would have been at home because you're just more comfortable here. It tells me on the road that I think that shows growth. That shows that you're learning the league. It shows you can win in a place maybe that you've not seen before or you're not quite as comfortable in. And I mean, that stretch they've had on the road is really, really impressive. Here, I don't worry too much about it yet. I mean, it's not like they have a disparity in their records like they do in Vancouver where they've got 5 wins on the road. If you've got one area of play, whether it be home or road that you let you down that much, that you get that little success in, you're just not going to overcome it. And Toronto's not there. And I don't know. I think mostly everything has been, I would say, has been pleasantly surprising this year. I don't know how it could be any other way or thought of any other way. To me, it's a bit of a surprise. But now they're in a little bit of a they're in a little bit of a danger area here before the break because they weren't very good against the Rangers. They lose 1 point on the weekend to Ottawa. Calgary comes in here that it's a team they should beat, but Calgary just got spanked the other night. What if Calgary comes and plays a great game? Now you've given away 5 of 6 points, and it can happen pretty quick.
What do you think's gone on in Calgary, Ray? Is it, do you think it's a little bit of coaching? Is it personnel? The way that just the group of players. I know the goaltending hasn't been. I mean, their GM doesn't have a contract for next year. I really don't know what to make of it.
The stuff about the GM really surprised me. I didn't know that, and to be honest with you, I've never really heard of it. you know, maybe it's happened before where a GM's contract runs out and then they just make a change at the end of the year. But I don't know that I've ever really heard of that. So if your general manager has a expiring contract, are you allowing him to make moves going forward? Because he doesn't have a contract for next year. What if he wants to trade something of the future for something for today? It's a really odd dynamic. As for their players, you know, I thought a couple of years ago they were on the road to something pretty good, and I still think so, but a little bit of, you know, Johnny Gaudreau is now gets no space on the ice, and he missed 10 games with a broken finger. He started late, and, you know, he's not had a very productive year. Sean Monahan had a really slow start. He's got, you know, he's got goals in five straight, and he's up to 15 goals. But they've got, you know, they've got a young guy like Sam Bennett. They try him on the wing. They try him in the middle. He's all of a sudden gone, I think, 9 or 10 or 11 games without a point. They're kind of a mishmash a little bit, and there's been unpredictability and ups and downs to their game that I'm sure they would like to flatten out, but they don't seem to be able to put it together for a long enough stretch to really make some hay. I mean, they're in a wild card spot, so I guess that's pretty decent for them. But this is you know, they've got beat four times by Edmonton. They've left points on the table there. I don't know. I think they're like a lot of teams. Maybe they have good stretches when they play well, and they're not good enough to you know, to continue long stretches of really good play. They, you know, they got enough holes in their game that it kind of sets them off course a little bit.
Ray, how much complaints have you heard about this condensed schedule? For me, I've told the guys, every game that I do, I talk to, you know, the opposing team or a home team, and everyone's got a comment about the condensed schedule.
I've yet to pass a game, Noodle, without somebody mentioning it, and it's, you know, they know everybody's got it, you know, that they've got the tight schedule, but it's also like they don't care about anybody else, right? They're just trying to, you know, they just talk about their schedule, the fact that they've, you know, they're playing seven games in 11 days, or, you know, hey, we're right in the middle of 6 and 8 with travel. And, you know, like Columbus and Ottawa this past weekend. I mean, they played each other on Thursday. Then Columbus played in Columbus on Saturday. And then they had to fly up to Ottawa. Ottawa had less than 24 hours to play yesterday. They played 7 o'clock on Saturday night and then 5 o'clock yesterday. And there's no escape from it. And I mean, it seems so obvious now, but I can't believe nobody put this all together. Condensed schedule. Hey, let's give them a week off to rest. Well, of course that gives you less days. Of course it's going to get more condensed. It's way too many games in too few days, for sure.
Well, when you're really going to hear it is this weekend, because so many people hate the All-Star game anyway. So now they're like, oh, here we go. You guys get 3 or 4 more days off. And
of all the four major sports, do you not think it's the worst, like, All-Star game?
The Pro Bowl is so much worse.
Oh, you're right.
The Pro Bowl is actually a joke. They don't even tackle or anything. But it's at least that's kind of at the end
at least
of the year.
It's in Hawaii.
It's in Hawaii. It's right before the Super Bowl. They're just like, go ahead.
Just think of that, though. Okay, let's have a sport that is absolutely brutal on the body. Let's have another game. This will be fun. No, it's not.
You're not getting paid for it or anything. It's just a pain in the ass to go.
And you know, somebody's going to, by accident, run into you hard enough that it's going to hurt. And you're like, well, what am I doing here? I don't want to be here.
Or there's a hero move, like the late Sean Taylor pulled that off of the Pro Bowl. Remember that hit? He laid some guy out.
It was the punter.
You're right. It was the punter.
He Pete Rose'd him?
You got to see this hit. He's a missile coming through here, and he just decapitates some guy.
Now,
with
if I
the
remember
hit.
Right, Hayes, didn't the punter take off? Like, he faked a punt or something, and he was running up the sideline. and Taylor just, oh, my gosh, it was like a cartoon character.
I think you're right. I think you're, and you can just picture the punter's like, hey, this is funny. We're at the Pro Bowl.
He's
look at me.
High-stepping it down the wall.
Yeah, he's like, this will be a blast. And some guy just destroys him.
I'm watching it right now.
It almost looks like a...
And he jumps up, like, high-fiving everyone. Like, right. He's like, what a hero.
It looks like a commercial or something. Like, something you would see in, like, a Nike commercial or, like, a Doritos commercial where they're goofing on the situation.
It should have been a Geico commercial.
Right.
You want to save money on insurance?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the Pro Bowl for you. But as for, you know, everyone complaining about the condensed schedule... It's the bad ice analogy. You're both playing on it. Every single team has the same problems.
I mean, Ryan Miller's comments last night. Did you see him? He's complaining about the quality of the ice.
Yeah, great, but you're all playing on it.
I don't know. Did you see Patrick Kane's goal?
Yeah.
It was on the same ice, I think.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous shot.
Well,
there must have been one smooth piece of ice right where Kane picked up the puck.
Yeah, he found it somehow.
Yeah.
But what doesn't get brought up here from the players, I'm sure... And I know players love this, and this is why they're not going to admit to it. No one practices anymore.
Right.
Like, I hear O'Sullivan brings it up all the time in the lunch. He's like, yeah, it's not ideal that you play every second night, but if you're telling me I don't ever have to practice, I'll sign off on that. Because, yeah, players might hate travel, and they hate playing three games in 5 nights, whatever, but nobody hates practicing more than players.
Yeah,
no, you guys all hate it. You've all told me that. It's the worst. So the condensed schedule, at the very least, the way you're benefiting – if you're a player, you don't practice anymore.
I love it. Just like the playoffs. You never practice in the playoffs. Just morning skating, game, and away you go.
So why don't they bring that up?
But we hate it. Not because it's tiring, just because it's monotonous.
You're just putting your gear on again.
Yeah. That's why when we didn't have to go to the morning skates anymore, when you get to a certain, seniority, you know, I never had to go on the morning skates unless I wanted to. I never went again. Never. I'm like, I hate the morning skates. I don't want to tie my skates any more than I have to. And so that was fantastic. The practice thing, I think the guys that are really pissed off about it are the coaches. They got nothing else to do. All they can do is stare at video now instead of badgering you on the ice.
That's what it is.
And I understand that. I understand where the coaches are control freaks, and they want to work on everything, and they want to be in there every day. That's never going to change based on the schedule, but... I think that would be an interesting poll. If you asked every NHL player currently or former players...
Does the condensed schedule bother you because you don't have to practice? What do you like?
What would you prefer? Play every second night and never practice, or play every fourth night and practice every day and get bag skated? What would you prefer to do?
That's a terrible analogy because you wouldn't get bag skated every day.
Okay, well, you know what I mean.
That was one of your hypothetical... Monday at midnight.
That was a bit of a stretch. I'll give you that.
He was trying to sell the point.
Bring home the point here. Really sell it.
You were skewing the poll data.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was.
Do you guys have 1.5 million people in the studio?
Trump did for the inauguration.
I've never seen more people argue about the stupidest things in the world.
Yeah, but he's the one arguing about it.
Secretary is yelling and screaming at the start of every day.
They're screaming at each other like, you're wrong about the attendance. Who cares?
Well, it's a big distraction, you're right, because they're actually doing a lot of things behind the scenes that aren't getting talked about.
Yeah.
Because we're worrying about the most obscure things
in the world.
You want to hear obscure? You know what I was reading about over the weekend? This is the most Trump story ever. Apparently the cake at the inauguration...
Was
a replica of the Obama one.
Right.
So people are accusing Trump of plagiarizing the cake.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
But that's the point. You're just arguing about stupid things. You're yelling into the wind.
But... He is the one that is tweeting about it and yelling and starting a lot of the problems.
I'm not defending Trump in any way. What I'm saying is I think people are not looking at the bigger facts here. Instead, they're worried about what cake he had.
You're right. It's totally
it's so
irrelevant
stupid.
News. It's fake news is
it's
what it is.
It's fake news.
You are fake news.
Thank you. Anyway.
My 7-year-old argues about his cake if it's not the right one at his birthday.
Yeah.
That's important to him. Who the hell cares? It's a cake. Nobody ate it anyway.
Well, what does he want?
Who eats a ceremonial cake anyway? It just stands there to look at.
Well, it's so true. It's like wedding cakes, man. I was at my sister's wedding over the weekend, and they had this glorious cake. You know, triple layered, triple whatever, flavored, all that. And
Did you eat?
No, I didn't even go close to it. I don't think I've ever had wedding cake.
Really? I had some of your wedding cake. I always go after the wedding cake.
Do you even know what your wedding cake looked like?
I honestly really don't. I don't.
You didn't get the picky with the slicing of it?
I don't know if we did that. I think we. I guess we probably did.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't even remember. I just. I couldn't even tell you.
I'm a white cake fan. Like, I like
noodles,
just vanilla cake.
That is not a surprise. That is not a surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you don't even. And let me guess, like very little icing on it.
I think there was probably that hard, like, gross icing.
Yeah, you
but,
peel that off, right?
Yeah.
Because who wants to eat that? You'd lose a tooth.
But anybody who has, like, carrot cake or something, that's ridiculous.
I believe there was carrot cake involved in this.
Carrot
this
cake
one.
Is. It was like, it's not even a carrot cake.
You're preaching to the choir, but. Like, it was a
Hang on,
beautiful
you don't like
looking
cake.
No. Why would I want carrots in my cake? It doesn't
okay,
make
what
sense.
What about banana bread?
Yeah, but banana is a fruit, not a vegetable. Would you like a vegetable? Like, how about a cucumber cake? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Okay, now you're being silly.
now I'm pulling a Haze and going. Yeah.
You know what? You proved your point pretty well, though. I'll give you a standing ovation.
It's a vegetable as opposed to fruit. That's what I'm saying.
I feel I've lost this argument. I really do.
No, you haven't.
It's hard to dispute.
It's just as much. If you put a piece of carrot cake in front of me, I'll eat it just because I like cake. But it's very low on my depth chart. Put it that way. It's
if
the
I can
backup
put chocolate on it, if I can put chocolate on it, it'll be just fine.
That's true. And they usually have vanilla, French vanilla icing on top of it. But all that does is mask the carrot flavor in your cake.
Exactly. You're basically circumventing the carrot.
Right.
Is essentially what you're doing.
Why is O not contributing to a cake discussion?
I don't know if O likes cake that much.
I don't mind a carrot cake.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not my fave. I think Steph got me a cake one year and it was carrot cake. And I was like...
My mom used
to make
the
wrong one.
My mom used to make rhubarb pie. That would sit there for weeks on our counter.
Oh, the hell's a strawberry that? Rhubarb? I would just go face first into that.
Gotta have vanilla ice.
I'll agree with
but
you.
But anything's good with vanilla ice cream. But I mean, rhubarb.
What's wrong with the rhubarb?
I think the worst invention of food of all time. Have you ever had that Christmas cake with all the fruit in it?
Oh, awful. Yeah.
It's a pile of garbage.
It is. You could concuss somebody if you hit them with that stuff.
It was so dense.
8 pounds. Oh.
Yeah. You could shoot it around in the backyard if you wanted.
And my mom would go, anybody want some Christmas cake? To do what with it? Eat it? Are you crazy? What's wrong with you?
Knock someone out
it
with
had,
it.
Like,
if you want,
but... gums. It had like wine gums. It had the weirdest. Mixture of it was so dense, I even know what it was, but it was gross.
Cake is like pizza. If you mess that up, you've really taken a wrong turn.
Yeah, I agree.
Like cake should almost be unanimously enjoyed.
Yes, but this is that thing is. I don't even know who ate it. You know, Noodles. You said that rhubarb pie would sit there for weeks.
Yeah.
That Christmas cake. I'm convinced you just served the same piece every Christmas.
Just
who the hell is going to eat it?
Haul it
Nobody
out of the freezer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Haul it out of the freezer every year and put it back in there on the 26th.
Anyway, Leafs Flames tonight on TSN 4.
Yeah.
Should be a good one, buddy. Enjoy it. And you're off to Ottawa, I think, again tomorrow. You're
going
back and
Washington
forth.
Washington and Ottawa, and then they've had enough of me, and Noodles goes in on Thursday.
Yeah. Are you paying taxes in Ontario yet, or what?
No, don't alert anybody, please.
No. I don't think our government's going to get onto that anyway.
I wouldn't
be too worried about it.
Okay, talk to you, boy.
All right, buddy. There's Ray Ferraro, and Ray on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. They'll get you out of your timeshare guaranteed or give you a complete refund. With offices in Toronto, or visit timeshareexitteam.ca. You all right over there?
I'm good, buddy.
I think rhubarb... Like I get the strawberry rhubarb.
Strawberry rhubarb.
Straight rhubarb.
But what is straight rhubarb? You got to have like another
It's not just
fruit.
Rhubarb, though. It's got all kinds of sugar, and it's basically doctored up to taste like gold.
Exactly. But all you're doing is sliding in rhubarb into a pie.
Rhubarb?
A rhubarb straw
pie. I love strawberry
But there's
rhubarb.
Blueberry. Is there blueberry rhubarb, too?
I'm not a blueberry guy, so I don't.
Neither am I, but.
I've never tried it.
Rhubarb is one of those things. It's like putting celery in
it. It's a weird texture.
I'll tell you an old school move. I don't know if anybody knows anyone else that does it, but my dad puts cheddar cheese on an apple pie.
I've heard it being done. Cheese curds was...
Is that a yes guy or
I think
no
it's a
guy?
No guy.
It's a major no guy.
That sounds
no
like a
guy.
No guy.
That's a no guy.
One like, more no guy?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I think it's a no guy.
Like shredded cheese?
No, like a slab, you know, when you cut it off. Like
of the brick.
Why would he do that? I don't understand the connection.
Dude, no kidding.
Like apples and cheese. That's
well,
not
a cheese
thing.
Plate. Cheese plate always has...
But there's no apples on a cheese plate.
On the Air Canada plane, there is.
You get apples and cheese.
You get the cheese whatever it's called, the snack platter.
There it was alarming the first time I saw it, but I never made a comment.
Yeah, I would have a conversation with him and say, you got to stop that. But I guess just, to each their own.
And every father has this analogy where it says, he says, it all goes to the same place. My dad would have mashed potatoes, gravy, and roast beef, and then on the same plate have dessert.
No. I've told you about my cousin. I'm convinced this guy's a zombie. Like, he's been bitten by something that he'll throw food into like a Ziploc bag.
Yeah.
And then just eat it out of a Ziploc bag. Like, he'll take it home like at the end of like Thanksgiving.
Right.
My grandma or my mom or something, like, all right, we got leftovers, take it. Like, let me put a plate together. He's like, no, fire in a Ziploc. Like, Ziploc, there's peas in there and there's mashed potatoes and carrot, and then there's like dark
is
meat.
A guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guy's a sicko.
Dracula.
Sicko. But I like to separate the food.
Me too. I'm a freak when it comes to that. Like, I'll give you some.
Got a dog named Precious. I guarantee it.
Hey, Precious.
Someone texting in saying carrot cake is the Frankie Corrado of cakes. That's not nice.
No.
Although a lot of people are wondering why we haven't taken a strip off Martin Marincin yet today. We haven't even mentioned his name.
Let's take a break and we'll get back to Marty Marincin.
Let's refuel before we really take a run at his game.
Hot Martin Marincin talk coming up.
All right, Marcellus Wiley in about 10 minutes. Listen to Overdrive every weekday from the Maple Leaf lineup player of the day. On Friday, call in with the names of all five players, and you can win a pair of lower bowl tickets to see the Leafs take on the Stars February 7th at the ACC. Today's theme is former Maple Leaf All-Stars. And the player of the day is Phil Kessel.
Ooh.
Felipe, Phil Kessel is your Maple Leaf lineup player of the day. I should point out quickly, a lot of people are on board with the cheddar cheese on apple pie routine.
I don't
real? Like a lot of people tweeting in and texting in saying, we don't even know what we're missing out on. So maybe your dad is onto something.
But it's people that like the sweet and salty, too. See, I'm not a big sweet and salty fan.
Well, what's cheese? It's not either.
Yeah, is cheese supposed to be what, salty?
No, but it's polar opposites. That's my point. Sweet and salty. And then you've got cheese and apple pie. It just, they think it mixes.
It's a no guy.
Yeah, no thanks.
No guy
for me.
Speaking of no guy, Martin Marincin with the puck on a stick with 2 minutes left. Like, I'm at the wedding on Saturday, so I'm trying to mix in updates, right? I'm on Twitter. I'm checking out the TSN Go app and just trying to get a read on what's going on because I knew I wasn't going to see any of the game, and I was emceeing the wedding. So
right.
You know, I kept having to go up and down, and I was sitting right beside the podium, so I couldn't be phone guy while other people were up speaking.
Right.
Which I know now that I've always known that I have a phone addiction. It's really bad. It's horrible. Like, it's a real addiction. But I was fighting this thing like Gollum with the ring. Like, when people were up talking at the podium and my phone was in front of me, I was just horse-eyeing my phone, thinking I want to check out what's going on, get an update on the game and stuff.
Really?
But I showed restraint.
You could have played the game.
What do you mean?
On your phone.
Yeah, I'm going to sit there emceeing the wedding with the game on.
Well, when you're not talking, did you have a regular seat, obviously, at the head table?
I was at the head table, but I was right beside the podium because I kept getting up, right?
You
so when people were up there speaking, they were...
Yeah, go to the game.
You had a responsible...
Right.
I mean, you had a big responsibility.
Dude, I saw
night.
Something yesterday. I'd never seen anything like this in my life.
What?
There was a dude in an elevator. He had something attached to his glasses.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
And I go, do you mind if I ask what's on your glasses? He's like, yeah, I'm watching E.T. right now on my glasses. I go, what? I took his glasses, and the dude was watching a movie.
You've got the screen inside your one lens.
There was this little clip that went right into the center of his eye, and he was watching a movie with his glasses.
So walking around society with that.
Yeah.
Driving probably on the 401.
Well, no, he was in an elevator.
But why would you want to watch something like that so close up?
I don't, dude, this made it look, I don't know. I've never seen anything like it, though. It was technology that was redonk.
More than just technology and stuff.
It was.
Yeah.
It was on a different level than what our
boy. Do you even know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
I know exactly. I've seen it before. I've seen the technology. And I've never experienced it, but that's where they were, the wave of the future.
That does not sound appealing at all. Anyway, so I'm at the wedding, right? And,
yes.
You know, every once in a while I'm checking out my phone. And I'm not looking for credit here. I know that I have a phone addiction. So the fact that I showed restraint is not something I'm proud of necessarily. But I knew something went down when I went to Twitter and I had like 48 mentions
yes.
2 minutes after I last checked. And I'm like, okay, I know where this is going because I knew the score was 2-1 at that point. So something happened. There was a meltdown. And if you asked me to make a call before I checked on who was the culprit. Said meltdown, I probably would have said number 54 or 52, Martin Marincin. Sure enough, Martin Marincin had some time.
Mike Babcock said it best. When you get an injury to a guy like Morgan Riley, you're putting other guys out on the ice. And if you don't do that, you got to play less people and play them a ton. I think they might want to lean to less people, play them a ton coming like these last three games. Like just roll Zaitsev, Gardner,
but
Herrick.
Who's your third guy? That's the problem. Like Pollock and Hunwick, there's a limitation on how many minutes you can play them.
Whatever. But Frankie Corrado took a couple penalties. He had giveaways. He had passing it to the goaltender issues. This guy here is tossing it up in the crowd with 2:47 left in the game. It's like,
it's not good.
What did Mike Singletary say? Was it like, can't win with them? Can't.
Yeah, that's when he was with the Bears, I think.
No, the Niners.
With the Niners, you're right. That was Vernon Davis when he sent Vernon Davis off. That's what happened.
He's like, can't coach him. Can't win with them.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
It's one of the all-time great coaching rants.
Get that clip for me, Mark. Because it was something like that.
That's what you get when you get a seventh defenseman who has to play minutes, and let alone an eighth defenseman who had to play minutes. That was inevitable with Riley out.
Jamie talks about goaltender depth. They got to create some defenseman depth.
Well, we'll have to get into this because my understanding is there is a couple guys on the Marlies that may be pushing through. It'd be interesting to see if they start calling these characters up in front of two guys.
They probably wouldn't be too far away from that.
All right, we'll discuss that more in the 6 p.m. hour. Craig Conroy from the front office in Calgary will join us around 6:10. But Marcellus Wiley will check in, get his thoughts on what went down yesterday. The Pats and the Falcons are on their way to a Super Bowl. And some Yahoo in New England, who's a diehard Pats fan, pulled the fire alarm in the hotel of the Steelers on Saturday night.
He has the best reasoning of all time, though.
We'll tell you about that reasoning next. Craig Conroy will join us from the Flames front office around 6:10. Leaves Calgary tonight on TSN 4. Pregame at 7 p.m. Super Bowl 51 is set down in Houston. Patriots going to their seventh Super Bowl this century. Seventh time Brady and Belichick will be down there. And Martellus Bennett, who's their tight end, he's going to his first Super Bowl. He had a great tweet last night after the game because he was celebrating, like going crazy. He had his kids out there. He had his wife out there dancing around like a lunatic.
Yeah.
And he said he looked around and all of his teammates had left because this is like clockwork for them.
Old hat for them.
Like Brady probably doesn't even celebrate going to a Super Bowl anymore.
It's like a yearly thing. LeBron going to the finals, Brady to the Super Bowl.
LeBron's been to 6 straight. Like, do you think he even.
Is it 7 straight?
No, it's 6 straight. 4 with Miami in the past, 2 with Cleveland.
Right.
He's been to 6. He's been to 7, though. He went to the one in 09, I think it was, in Cleveland. But I don't, like, he probably doesn't even dream about going to the NBA Finals anymore.
Probably,
like, part of his season.
Yeah.
He's probably just, he books his schedule.
He pencils it in before the season starts.
Exactly.
Let's bring in Marcellus Wiley, longtime NFLer, co-host on ESPN Sports Nation. What do you think LeBron's routine is before the season starts in terms of him planning for the NBA Finals?
Oh, he clears the schedule, says, I am booked well in advance all the way to the end of June, because he knows every time he's on a team, obviously that team is going to more than likely be in the finals and certainly be in contention for. So some guys just know they got that power, man, and they got to respect it.
Some Yahoo Pats fan got arrested because on Saturday night he somehow found out where the Steelers were staying, which is really a weird thing. Like, why would you go seek that kind of information out? And then I guess he drank too much and got loaded and pulled the fire alarm at like 3 in the morning, and the cops found
him. How does a dummy like that find out where they are?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how you seek out that information or how you attain it, but this guy's found a way to do that, and he was in court today, I think, and his lawyer isn't even trying to get him off. He said he was really drunk, and he's a diehard Pats fan, and he was being a dummy. You would have spent a lot of nights on the road in hotels. Did you have to ever deal with a situation like that?
No, we never had to deal with that, but it's not too difficult to find out where the visiting team is staying. You can ask all the autograph seekers that are in the lobby and also all the groupies that are in the lobby, because every time we land in the city, we saw both in huge populations. So I guess I've never figured out how they find out, but hundreds and hundreds of people always find out where you're staying. With that said, I think that knowledge mapped on with the narrative of the Patriots being cheaters and the Belichicks. And I think that this was a passionate drunk fan who decided to run with that narrative and say, hey, if that's what they think we are, let's go all the way with it and pull the switch. And you know, it's disturbing, but what can you really do to a franchise? You can't penalize them because of some absurd fan. So just a tough break for the Steelers, but even if they got a good night rest, I think they still were going to get beat down.
What the hell do the Pats do, though, Marcellus? I mean, how do they just dummy the Steelers like that? Like, what? There was a tweet the other day saying that it's like they have, you know, recorders in the visiting locker. What is it that they do specifically that they just expose the other team and they dummy everybody?
Well, in this particular case, it's the Steelers. They know what kind of defense they're going to see. They know that they're going to come out there and run zone. And the way that the Patriots play offensively, they have option routes on every single route. A lot of my friends who have played for the Patriots say it's the most complex playbook in the NFL. So Tom Brady, as soon as he establishes chemistry with a receiver on an option route, which is every single play, it's pretty much indefensible. They're short yardage passing, like 2 yards, 3 yards, 5 yards. But all they want to do is either have the long handoff or just keep the sticks moving. So they like to be in third and short a lot and just keep the sticks moving. They're playing a game of chess that everyone else is too impatient to play. So that's what they really do. They're so methodical and they keep the sticks moving that it becomes very difficult for you to keep that pace. And if you look at it, their receiving core, by talent, by athleticism, certainly substandard, but by production, that's where they show up because of the relationship Brady has with them. And they have some guys that can break those routes and that are smart and disciplined. They see the defense. You're playing inside coverage, I break out. You're playing outside, I break in. Tom Brady, having the talent, having the understanding of the playbook to hit those guys in stride, is why they keep rolling.
You just broke down the greatness of Brady and Belichick, but we were talking about this hypothetical earlier this afternoon. If you could only have one, for whatever reason, going into this Super Bowl game against Atlanta, so you got 2 weeks to prep and then one game, would you take Brady or Belichick?
You know, it's a crazy answer because both of those guys hurt without each other. Look at Bill Belichick, who had five of his first six seasons as a head coach, Cleveland and New England, as losing seasons. Tom Brady gets into the lineup all of a sudden, four Super Bowls later. Look at Tom Brady when he's not in that lineup. Matt Castle goes for 11 wins. You see guys come in this year and start off with a 3-1 start. So you can say system, but then you can also look at the system and say, hey, without Brady, what system was this? If I had to pick, because I remember Bill Belichick as a defensive coordinator with the Jets and the Giants and playing against those teams and realizing how he would shut down our Buffalo Bills attack, I'm going with Belichick. I know Brady may go down as the greatest of all time at his position. I think Belichick is going to go down as the greatest coach of all time. So we're really trying to split a hair here. This is real high-level elite play and coaching, but I will go with Belichick.
With Marcellus Wiley, another thing I was thinking about yesterday is how Pats are on their way to another Super Bowl. They just continue to roll, and Rob Gronkowski's been out for half the year and didn't play the two playoff games. And this is a guy who is under contract, but a lot of dispute out there or a lot of conversation out there that he wants to get paid or he wants a reworked contract. Does the success of the Pats without Gronkowski potentially damage his value?
I don't think it should. Like, I understand where people will respond to it and think that way. That's conventional wisdom. But I think Belichick and I think Kraft are smarter than that to realize how much better, how much easier it would be if they kept Gronkowski in the lineup healthy and productive. Now, the problem is you have to put in clauses. You have to have a contract structure around his availability because he's been hurt three of the last five seasons. So when you talk about that, I think what's hurting him more is not the success of the team, but the fact that he can't stay there in part with that success to make sure that his name, his value is married to it. But when he's healthy, you pay that guy like the top tight end in the league. But the contract, I think, will have clauses to respect the fact that more times than not, he's actually not healthy.
Moving over to the other game, looking back on it now, hindsight being 2020, it was over after the Packers' second possession. They obviously, Atlanta made a statement with their first possession, stormed down the field, put seven on the board. And then the Packers miss a gimme field goal, considering it was inside a dome. And then they fumble in the red zone on their second possession. It was over at that point. I mean, they put a bagel up on the board in the first half. I did not see that coming. When you look back on that game, were you more impressed with Atlanta, or was it more about you being critical with the way Green Bay played?
Well, watching the game in real time, I was critical of the way Green Bay was playing. As we know in the NFL, especially on the road, you can't give up points, and you certainly can't give the ball over to the other team. And that's what they did. They missed opportunities to score. They didn't keep pace. And more importantly, they had turnovers. So once you have that, you're pretty much behind the eight ball. And it's going to be tough going against the number one scoring offense if you can't keep pace. And because they were so injured, they had so many issues, whether it was offensive line, wide receiver, defensive back. Hey, the first play of the game on a kickoff, they get a defensive back hurt, and they're already hurt at that position. The writing was on the wall for a team that gave a valiant effort and went out there and tried to win as many games as they could and got hot at the right time. But because they were so beat up, that mass unit wasn't able to keep pace. And they played over their heads for a while, but it caught up with them with a team that was not only good but healthy at the right time.
You were in the league back in the late 90s when the best show on turf was running wild in St. Louis. And there's a lot of people now trying to compare what Atlanta's doing to what the Rams were doing in the late 90s. Do you see those comparisons?
No, I don't. I mean, look, you can lead the league in scoring, and every time you lead the league in scoring doesn't mean you get compared to maybe the greatest offense we've ever seen. I still think there's a huge gap between those two. The weapons that they had and with the ease that they played, would be hard to compare any other team, at least right now in the moment. You look at what they were putting out there, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner, good Lord. The guys would just step on the field, and before they even run a play, the scoreboard already said 7-0, just because it knew that this team was that explosive. Atlanta looks good. I mean, they got the two-headed monster at running back, Coleman and Freeman. They certainly got Julio Jones, a little bit of a drop-off after that, but Sanu, hey, playing well, certainly yesterday. I just don't think man-to-man and Marshall Faulk really being that X factor. Let's not forget how versatile he was. I think there's a huge divide between the two.
Quickly, I know a lot of people are going to start obviously pumping the tires of Ryan. They've been doing it all year. He's been absolutely outstanding. But I'm going to stop myself because this feels like deja vu considering what we were doing with Cam Newton a year ago. Everyone said, Cam is so good. He's going to change the game. Now he's going to be like this every year. And this year he had a big drop-off. Where do you stand in terms of your belief that this is the new Matt Ryan and he will continue to play like this for the next 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I would pump the brakes somewhat. Certainly give him respect because of how he responded. You got to remember, Matty Ryan has always been good, very good. Last year was a step back for him, and he went and worked and put it as an initiative to get better this offseason, and he did. Will he have that same kind of drive that came from the fact that people doubted him? Or will he come off of a season of such success that he thinks that everything is good, just keep status quo, and not be able to improve as much as he did this year? I would say that this Matt Ryan version of it is here to stay, but in completeness, no. To replicate this again will be tough sledding, but certainly I think he'll be motivated, but I don't think to this level.
We'll really start teeing up the game next Monday. Thank you for doing this, buddy.
All right, let's do it, guys. Take care, man.
Marcellus Wiley, longtime NFLer and co-host of ESPN Sports Nation. Craig Conroy coming up, front office of the Flames. We'll keep teeing up the Leaf game tonight, get back into DeMar's injury and the Raptors' woes. Final hour up next. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.